Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
It wasn't easy watching the Titans take on the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday, but my team, and you guys know who listen to this show all the time, I'm a season ticket holder, live in Nashville, cursed Tennessee Titan fan. What a win. What an unbelievable win. Massive battle, 2-6-3 teams. Titans are down by double digits in the second half. And just a couple of absolute man plays by the Titans to get the win. The A.J. Brown, if you haven't seen it, the A.J. Brown catch and touchdown is as ridiculous beast mode of a play as I have seen from a wide receiver this year. The Ravens should have had that tackle several yards short of a first down. Would have been maybe a tough decision for the Titans. Do you kick a field goal or do you go for it? And probably I think they would have ended up going for it there. But instead, he scores. Then the Ravens get the ball. They get the two-point conversion, perfect play call. Ryan Tannehill fakes the handoff to Derrick Henry, goes in standing up. I mean, I don't know how that would not have been effective or efficient in that way. Just an incredible performance by the Titans to get a touchdown there and the two-point conversion. The Ravens drive back down. Justin Tucker hasn't missed a field goal in like 15 years, it feels like. He bombs it through easily. And then you're in this kind of crazy scenario where the game goes into overtime and you feel like whoever wins the toss, it was the exact same situation in the other really, really good overtime game that we saw between the Packers and the Colts, where the Colts had like eight different penalties on them. Those were, I thought, the two just crazy moments when you have coin tosses and you think whoever wins the coin toss is going to win the game. But what happened? The Packers won the coin toss, turned it over, and then the Colts came down and won. And then in the similar vein, you have the Titans who lose the coin toss. Lamar Jackson gets the ball. Titans get their first sack of the game. And the Titans come down and have the walk-off with Derrick Henry. And that play with Derrick Henry, the walk-off. I'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. But to me, there are different games that take place during the course of the season where you answer the question, hey, is this team capable of winning a championship? And I'm not really convinced the Titans can win a championship because I don't think they can get pressure on the quarterback. But I'm pretty convinced now after watching the Ravens play a lot of games, that's not a Super Bowl caliber team. I'm not saying they can't win a playoff game or they can't be in a position where they have a chance late, but this is a team that has some pretty significant structural flaws, and they are getting worse as the season goes on as opposed to getting better. And you know what? In the game I watched between the Colts and the Packers, I felt like both the Colts and the Packers could go on and win the Super Bowl. I really do, because the big question for Phillip Rivers has always been, is it going to be the guy who can ever get to a Super Bowl, right? And with the Chargers at the end of his career, he couldn't have anybody block for him, and he can't move. He's basically a stationary guy in the pocket. And so if he can't move, then he throws the ball up, and he ends up putting himself in a position where there are a lot of opportunities where bad things can happen. And so as you kind of break down exactly what happens there, it's really kind of fascinating to see how good the Colts could be going forward with Phillip Rivers as their quarterback. And we know how good Aaron Rodgers is, by the way. The one thing I think probably Aaron Rodgers would like to be able to do again is I think he would like to be able to have a couple of those plays to do all over again in terms of down near the goal line, whether it was the right decision to spike the football and take away one of the pass opportunities, because I thought the Green Bay Packers were going to go down and actually find a way to win late against the Colts. And I bet a lot of Colts fans did too after that ridiculous throw on 3rd and 10 down the middle of the field for 50 yards. I really did feel like they were going to go find a way to get it done, and it just flat out didn't end up happening for them. So as you kind of break down in those scenarios, I was just so impressed to see Derrick Henry do what he did to the Ravens again, walk off. And for the Ravens to have to spend as long as they did stewing over that home playoff loss, to have the Titans show up and basically do it to them all over again, that was a phenomenal, incredible, lots of fun win to watch. And again, I'm not convinced that the Titans are really a team that can contend for a Super Bowl. I'm not. I don't think they have rush defensive ends. I think they wasted their first round pick. Got a lot of injuries, major issues on a lot of different levels for the Titans. I am convinced the Ravens aren't a team that can win a Super Bowl now, not as they're presently constituted. And I also believe, if you look forward and think about it, I also believe that the Colts are going to beat the Titans on Sunday and take command of that division. And I do think the Colts can start to get hot because they have the defense that could theoretically give a guy like Patrick Mahomes some trouble in the postseason. And I'm not sure how many other teams have a defense of their caliber. But man, what a win. What an incredibly fun game to watch. I'd like to think my team could win a division and we could host a home playoff game for the first time in 12 years or so. But we'll have to wait and see what exactly goes on there. So early games, fantastic. Titans, Ravens, and also the Packers and the Colts. And going forward now, we also had a phenomenal Sunday night football game, the second divisional game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Raiders. And boy, oh boy, was this a game that you and I and everybody else out there had an awful lot of fun rolling into Thanksgiving week with. And I mean, let's be honest, that's what Patrick Mahomes does. He wins games that you think your team is going to win. The Raiders went on the road and they won in Kansas City earlier this year. And they thought when they hit Jason Witten for that touchdown pass, I guarantee you, hey, worst case scenario, we're going to overtime. And the great teams don't try to get into overtime. They try to win the game in regulation and not leave anything to coin flips or who gets possession or things that are outside of their control. And what is in the Chiefs' control is this. They have the best quarterback in the NFL. And if you were the Oakland Raiders, even after that Jason Witten play, minute 45 or so remaining, the Chiefs went the length of the field. And what I loved about it was you saw very early on, this is not a team driving to try to bang through a 45-yard field goal. They're trying to win this football game. And the Raiders had a bus dropping. It looked into zone coverage. Travis Kelce worked his way across. Mahomes got outside the pocket. He's wide open as Travis Kelce can ever be on the football field, given he's a pretty big target. And Mahomes found him, and he made the Raiders pay. And to me, I was talking earlier, not sure about the Titans, certain that the Ravens aren't a Super Bowl contender. It's pretty clear, I think, at this point that both the Colts and the Packers are. Raiders aren't a Super Bowl contender. They may be a playoff team. We'll see exactly how the rest of their season ends up shaking out. They've got a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball. Derek Carr did a lot of things well last night. But ultimately, they didn't have Patrick Mahomes. And when you don't have Patrick Mahomes, guess what happens? Sooner or later, Patrick Mahomes makes you pay. And it was late that he made him pay. And as a result, that's why I keep saying, until something crazy happens, the Chiefs have to be your favorite to win the Super Bowl. They're better than they were last year. I think they are less challenged because they feel a little bit to me like the New England Patriots with Brady, where every now and then they don't rise to the same level as their regular season competition. But when it gets into the postseason, it's going to be really, really hard to beat them. And I don't think anybody is. I think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl this year and repeat as Super Bowl champions. Now, it's hard to do. It may require them to go on the road against the Steelers. Home field advantage is going to be of minimal importance, I think, this year. You know what's never going to be of minimal importance? Having the best quarterback in the NFL. And I think ultimately that the Chiefs, gave you a little bit of a preview for what they're able to do last night against the Raiders. You can't give them the ball with a chance to go down the field and win, because I felt like it was like 9 times out of 10 that was what was going to happen. I was sitting watching this game and I said, look, the Chiefs being able to put this into this game into overtime is a foregone conclusion. So I said, kind of talking to myself, the question was, are they going to get the win? And you saw a couple of different quarterback situations. You saw with the Packers, Aaron Rodgers tried to do the same thing. He wasn't trying to put that game into overtime late against the Colts. He was trying to win it. And you felt like he was so angry at himself that he didn't manage to drive, whatever the heck it was, 92 yards and get that score in that situation. And you know Patrick Mahomes would have been furious with himself too if the game had gone into overtime. And so as you break all this down, the three biggest and most interesting games, I thought, Colts going up against the Packers, Titans against the Ravens, and the game that we saw in the night, phenomenal games, all three of them, the Raiders hosting the Chiefs. Ultimately, it came down to big-time quarterback play, and nobody has bigger and better quarterback play than the Chiefs, which is why Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have to be, I think, even more of a favorite this year to win the Super Bowl than they were for much of last season.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by my Lock It In co-host, one of them, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman on Twitter. You can find him there. He's up early with us here on the Outkick as the sun is way, way, way away from actually being rising in the desert of Las Vegas where he is. Furman, how about my Titans? How about that Derrick Henry walk-off touchdown run? To your credit, you thought there was some value on the Titans going into that game, and they backed you up. I mean, they made a nice comeback in the fourth quarter.
You know what? They took advantage of a game where both teams were dealing with a number of injuries. The Titans were down a couple of cogs on their offensive line, and that had been a real weakness without Taylor Lewan. But you look at Baltimore on the other side, arguably their three best defensive linemen. But for the Titans to do what they did, going into hostile territory, erasing that 11-point deficit, and ultimately getting the win, showed an awful lot for a team that needed a victory like that. And anytime you can do it outright in the NFL as a 6-point dog, it is impressive. I'm just glad you weren't arrested in Nashville running naked through the streets pulling an all-night celebration, given what you'd seen from the Titans the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I needed a win, especially after having watched Jared Garantano throw another pick six on Saturday night when it looked like Tennessee might be able to win one as an outright underdog, double digits on the road against Auburn. I mean, they were in really good shape late in the third quarter until that pick six happened. But let's dive into a lot of the different games. One of the big takeaways, and we talked a bit about this in the open, I feel like Justin Herbert basically locked up Rookie of the Year in an unfortunate way, because Joe Burrow's now out for the rest of the year. Tua got benched, and Herbert just came out and continued to do what he does, which is post ridiculous numbers. And so I'm curious, and I'm going to ask Sean Merriman this in the second hour, so I've already jotted down the question, but can you remember a guy in college like Justin Herbert who, remember, he won basically the Rose Bowl as a running quarterback, and he never looked anywhere near the same caliber of quarterback that he has for the Chargers, that has, as a rookie, looked this much better than he did as a quarterback his last year in college? Because I can't. I mean, he looks like a totally different player than he did at Oregon.
There's no doubt. They've taken the governor off and allowed him to throw the deep ball, something that wasn't in the arsenal at Oregon. And whether you
isn't that crazy? When you see how well he can throw the deep ball in the NFL with the most talented football players in the world, isn't it crazy they didn't let him do it in college?
It's pretty crazy. But the other thing, too, Oregon didn't have NFL-caliber wide receivers. That was one of the areas where they dealt with a ton of injuries in Herbert's final season in Eugene. But I think Mario Cristobal has to take a lot of the blame for running a conservative offense there. We know he comes from that Alabama coaching tree and the old-school mentality where it was run first. And now we're also dealing with Marcus Arroyo, who is his offensive coordinator there, and the impact we're seeing at UNLV. But it's definitely impressive when you watch it. And I guess if you're trying to find a comp, you can look in the rookie class, and while wasn't going from college to the NFL, it was a lot like Joe Burrow in his junior season at LSU to what we saw Joe Burrow look like in his senior season before he led LSU to the national championship and won the Heisman. But very rarely do you see a guy make this kind of leap, and it just speaks to the fact that his skill set was clearly underutilized in his final season at Oregon.
We're talking to Todd Furman. You can follow him on Twitter at Todd Furman. Who's going to win the NFC East?
I think it's going to be a war of attrition, and you look at the Giants, it's pretty incredible. The Giants have gone 3-2 over their last five games, and their two losses they have in that span is a one-point loss on Thursday night to the Philadelphia Eagles and the two-point loss on Monday Night Football to the Bucks. If they get both of those games to go their way, we're talking about them being a runaway freight train. Ultimately, though, the Giants' schedule gets a lot more difficult down the stretch, and I think Thursday takes on a massive amount of importance, a game that we'll all watch on Fox on Thanksgiving between the Cowboys and the Washington Football Team. The winner of that game, in my opinion, I think has the inside track because Philadelphia is an absolute dumpster fire right now. And if Doug Peterson wants to see what he has in a second-round pick, I'd put Jalen Hurts as early as this weekend because Carson Wentz isn't getting it done. And you look at Dallas, they get the big win yesterday beating the Vikings outright on the road. Meanwhile, Washington, you have a veteran stabilizing influence in Alex Smith, and you're starting to see their weapons get healthier. I wouldn't be stunned at all if Washington goes in there and knocks Dallas off its perch on Thursday, winning that game outright.
Let's presume whoever wins the NFC East, there's probably not a tremendous amount of difference in terms of what the lines would be for those games. It looks like the Bucks are going to be kind of slanted in there, right? Slotted in there, maybe I should say, as the 5 seed, which would mean they'd be going on the road against whoever wins the NFC East. How much of a favorite are we talking about Tampa Bay being over whichever team is playing at home in the NFC East?
You're looking at Tampa, as things stand right now, more than a touchdown favorite. I mean, we saw that number against the Giants. The Giants' power rate actually worse than the Eagles and the Cowboys, as things stand right now. Very similar as far as Washington is concerned as we continue to adjust their metrics. But you would be looking at Tampa more than a touchdown favorite unless something drastic really changed. And if you want to go back and find a historical comparison of sorts, it almost begs the parallel to the Marshawn Lynch earthquake game where the Seahawks were a massive underdog against the Saints. New Orleans goes in there and lays an absolute egg. But I think you're going to see a team playing in the elements. And other than Tom Brady, there's nobody on this Tampa roster that you trust in a game of that magnitude. Maybe Bruce Arians, maybe Byron Leftwich, Todd Bowles. None of those guys would have me brimming with confidence that I'd be inclined to bet one of those NFC East teams if they were more than a touchdown dog if you got a little bit of sloppy weather working in your favor.
You are the biggest Jameis Winston proponent in the media in the country. Taysom Hill went out and played, I thought, pretty well. Flash in the pan, or is there something to build on there for the Saints and what they saw from Taysom Hill?
It's one thing when you go out there and do it when you have the full week of preparation and you can utilize the element of surprise. Now you've put something on tape. Let's see how Sean Payton and this offense can innovate and create another iteration of Taysom Hill. But when you look at the NFL, it took them more than a season to figure out some of what Lamar Jackson did. And I don't think Lamar Jackson has completely regressed this season. A lot of it has to do with the offensive line. So when he goes on the road in Denver, we're going to see exactly how the Broncos scheme, what they can take away, and kind of make Taysom Hill play left-handed. But I think the bigger storyline in the Saints' win against the Falcons yesterday was how well that defense played. They went out there, they pitched a shutout. Taysom Hill didn't have to do much outside of his comfort zone, and that's really been the big revelation sparking this Saints' resurgence. We saw it on Sunday night against the Bucks. They followed it up against the 49ers. This defense might actually be the best defense going in the NFC, and that includes the likes of the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Los Angeles Rams, who we'll see later tonight.
You just mentioned Lamar Jackson, and obviously I started off this interview asking you about the Titans and their big win. But Lamar Jackson now 6-5 in his last 11 games. Among those five losses, Titans twice, the Chiefs, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and all of those are kind of rolling together in a way where it's like whenever he goes up against the best possible competition, things don't go particularly well for him. Obviously, the Patriots got him last week in that rainstorm up in Foxborough. Should people be nervous if they are Ravens fans about what exactly is going on with Lamar Jackson in this offense? Or is this an aberration? In other words, are the Ravens causing their own problems or are the problems being caused for them?
I think it's a little of column A and a little of column B. I mean, we've talked about Lamar's skill set and how he's best suited to operate from a clean pocket, to play when the Ravens have a lead, to have that stingy defense behind him. Now suddenly you're looking at a Ravens team that's had a muddled mess as far as their running backs are concerned. I think J.K. Dobbins should have been the guy, and it wasn't until yesterday against the Titans that he got the workload he deserves as the game breaker in the backfield compared to Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards. But when you lose a Pro Bowler in Ronnie Stanley that you gave gave nearly $100 million to a left tackle. You had Marshall Yanda, who's ultimately going to make his way into Canton, retire before the season. It's tough to replace two of the building blocks in front of Lamar Jackson. Then you look at some of the off-field distractions. Hollywood Brown dropped a couple balls early in that game. You've done nothing in your career that gives you carte blanche to run your mouth. At least your cousin's gone out there and performed and put up gaudy numbers from a statistical standpoint. There's a reason that the Ravens activated Dez Bryant, and I think their weapons aren't as good as we were led to believe last year. And defensively, they have to get healthy. No Calais Campbell, no Garrett Wolf, no Brandon Williams. That ultimately allowed Derrick Henry to have a repeat performance for what we saw in the playoffs. So until Baltimore has all of their complement of weapons healthy, we can't fully judge Lamar. But there's no doubt that he's not Kyler Murray, and I don't know if he's ever going to be a Justin Fields the way we look at his projections, knowing he's going to be a first-round pick coming out of Ohio State next season.
Okay, let's talk about that. I'm going to get to Thursday Night Football because I'm actually curious. Well, let me go ahead and go there because we got the Ravens game going up against the Steelers. Steelers are 10-0. That was a super physical game between the Titans and the Ravens. They now have to turn around and play on Thursday night. Different caliber of scrutiny, I think, is going to be on Lamar Jackson now because he's 6-4, as I mentioned before, losing a lot of these big games. This is going to be an almost prove-it-to-me type scenario. Effectively, the Steelers, 4.5-game lead with 6 to go. If they win this one, the division's fully over. The division may be over no matter what. What do you see in this one for the primetime game on Thanksgiving?
It's going to kill me. The only case I can make in this game is to back the Ravens here catching 3.5. Now, it's probably not a game as things stand right now that's ultimately going to make my betting card, but this is a number that's a touch inflated based on where the power numbers were coming into this past weekend, where we thought the Steelers would open at less than a field goal favorite. The problem for Baltimore is they have to get healthy. Now, Pittsburgh doesn't run the ball nearly as physically or as well as what Derrick Henry can do. James Conner isn't that same kind of back. And when you look at Baltimore in the secondary, I think they can match up against the Steelers' talented trio of receivers. But from an offensive standpoint, Coach Harbaugh and Greg Roman, they better spend 72 hours at the chalkboard trying to figure out every wrinkle, every trick play, and every nuance that they can use to attack this Steelers team. But you're going to get the Ravens, who right now at 6-4 know that they're on the outside looking into the playoff picture. And you mentioned the division race. We're going to be talking about them not even making the postseason. You're going to get them to throw the kitchen sink. I'm just not quite sure it's enough, but it's Ravens or pass as things stand for me right now Monday morning.
What'd you learn in the Colts-Packers game? It was an absolute heavyweight fight. The Colts win it in overtime. Any of your perceptions of either of these teams change based on what you saw?
I feel a little bit more validated. You know my feelings towards the Green Bay Packers.
The entire state of Wisconsin hates you because you've been anti-Packers for several years now.
The entire state of Wisconsin, I'm not sure what they're more bummed out. The second half that Green Bay put forth in the loss against the Colts or what their Wisconsin Badgers did on the road.
The fight in Reese Davis's took them down.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, Green Bay is going to go where Aaron Rodgers can take them. This is a team that's extremely deficient on the defensive side. You saw that on full display when Frank Reich made some adjustments. I continue, and I said it before the year, the Colts are my pick to win the South. I thought they were a legitimate dark horse in the AFC. Phillip Rivers obviously concerns you, but that's the reason they're not being given the same credit as some of the other contenders. They can run the ball with the emergence of Michael Pittman. It gives them a receiver on the end. They're starting to figure out how to utilize Nyheim Hines, Jonathan Taylor, and defensively, what they did in the second half to confuse Aaron Rodgers and give themselves a chance to come back, that's the kind of victory that resonates going forward. But I do think they're going to have their hands full in the revenge game against the Titans.
Heisman Trophy. We'll get into some college football here with you. How much of a favorite should Kyle Trask be in your mind as we come down the stretch run? I saw some places have him as 1-2 to win the Heisman in the wake of Justin Fields' 3 picks. Mac Jones, just pedestrian effort, and obviously Trevor Lawrence may have lost another game.
I think he has to be a heavy favorite. I mean, when you look at the upcoming schedule and what Kyle Trask is going to have available to him, the game that will ultimately determine his Heisman candidacy, and at this point it may not even matter, would be the SEC Championship against Alabama. And when you look at that performance, unless Trask were to go out there and throw for 200 yards and throw more interceptions than he had touchdowns, I think it's his award to lose. The numbers he's putting up are on par with Joe Burrow. Dan Mullen is an offensive mastermind. And the fact that he's been able to produce at such a high level each of the last 2 weeks without Kyle Pitts is even that much more impressive that their offense hasn't missed a beat. I think there's actually value in betting Kyle Trask as only a 1-2 favorite.
College football, anybody that with value from a national championship perspective to you at this point?
I can't really see it. I think ultimately you'll get more money on a money line rollover if you want to bet any of the big boys. Maybe you believe that Notre Dame can be the team, but the way I see Notre Dame, you're going to have to beat Clemson as an underdog, and then you would be underdogs in both semifinal games, and the Irish, of course, will have their hands full this Friday when they go to Chapel Hill as a modest field goal favorite. So,
did that line surprise you? Because it surprised a lot of people that Notre Dame's only around a field goal favored.
I think this Notre Dame secondary is extremely vulnerable. And you give Mack Brown 2 weeks to prepare with an NFL-caliber quarterback in Sam Howell. I think Notre Dame is going to have a lot of trouble trying to slow down that vertical passing game, much like they did against DJ and Clemson in their own building. Now, North Carolina defensively, that remains anybody's best guess because Wake Forest kind of gave the blueprint. If Ian Book wants to throw, this could be the first team to 40. But I think the number is extremely fair. I imagine you're going to get public support for the Irish, but in a little bit of a disjointed week, I think you could see home field advantage matter a little bit more. But it's the Blue Bloods and everybody else. I'm not going to sit here and champion for the little guy in BYU if you're going to potentially turn down a game against Washington. And Cincinnati, hey, they play a physical brand of defense, which would be fun to see against some of the elite teams. But you saw UCF have plenty of success offensively. And while Cincinnati's not the same now, we saw them struggle last year when they had to go to Columbus and take on Ohio State.
Todd Furman, good stuff as always. I will see you later today on the program, 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock Mountain, 2 o'clock Pacific on FS1, Fox Bet Live.
Always a pleasure, my good man.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Joined now by a guy who knows a little something about defense in the NFL. He's also got a great podcast with iHeart, the Lights Out podcast. He is Sean Merriman. He joins us a lot of times on Monday morning as we break down what we saw happen on Sunday. And we got a lot to get to, but I want to start with your boy Philip Rivers, who is aging, but he's still playing at a pretty high level. Colts get a big win over the Packers in what was an incredible overtime game. First of all, how good are the Colts? Are they a threat in your mind in the AFC? And how good has Philip Rivers been?
Well, for one, I think Colts are definitely a threat. Playing in a division for one like they're playing, and you always have a shot to come out on top. So when you look at teams like that, those are the type of teams you don't typically want to see in the playoffs first time around. I mean, they are well balanced. They have one of the best offensive lines in football. And look, I mean, as far as Philip, that was the biggest problem his last year with the Chargers. I mean, they had a banged-up offensive line. He was getting hit, and he's already a guy who can't run. He's not mobile. Definitely, he's never been that, but he's definitely not at this stage of his career, but they're blocking for him. They're giving him time, and these guys are going out making plays. And as long as they go out and keep making plays, they're going to be very scared to play down here in the stretch.
I mean, is it just me, or is the AFC in particular? I mean, I know how good Patrick Mahomes is on any given week, and certainly we can talk about the fact that the Steelers are unbeaten. But when I look at the AFC, it just looks wide open to me, right? I mean, they're just like, in terms of even trying to figure out who's going to make the playoffs, who's going to win divisions, it just seems like there's not a lot that separates the first team from the ninth or tenth best team.
No, it's not. And you look at the Steelers, and obviously they're the best team in football right now. They're the most balanced team in football right now, playing the game great in all three phases. And Ben Roethlisberger, man, I mean, look, him coming back off of that injury and him at his age, nobody thought. I mean, I definitely didn't think that he'll be playing at this level coming back so soon. And they're probably the most well-coached team in football. Mike Tomlin got these guys rolling this year. But you go look at Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football. And in any given time, any given day, he can blow you up and blow right by you. But you look at some of the other teams going around, man, and it's like you said before, it's just there's no one team that you're going to say, you know what, no one can beat them. Because, you look at the Colts, we just finished talking about the Colts. Could they go out and sneak and win a game against the Kansas City Chiefs? Absolutely. Could the Steelers end up in the playoffs still undefeated or go 16-0, 15-1? And losing the first round against one of these teams we just mentioned, absolutely. So if you look at the AFC, you're absolutely right. Any one of these teams can win any day of the week.
We're talking to Sean Merriman. How nervous do you think that the Baltimore Ravens should be about what's going on with Lamar Jackson? They are now in their last 11 games, 6-5. They lost a tough overtime game against the Titans, and we've talked about that game a decent amount on the show so far. But to me, big picture here, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, 6-5 in their last 11, 6-4 this season. Our defense is catching up. You've seen guys go out and take the NFL by storm, and then you know how it works. The NFL, the guys go back into their laboratory. They look at all the different defensive setups. As a guy who was an all-pro in the NFL, are you seeing things that are being done that the Ravens are clearly having trouble with, and is it more what they're doing or what the defense is doing to them?
Well, first and foremost, you know what kind of quarterback Lamar Jackson is, right? I mean, he's going to give you 150 to 200 yards throwing. He's going to rush for anywhere between 50 and 75 yards a game and have one or two rushing touchdowns, one or two throwing. Like, you know what you're going to get from him. I don't think he's the problem. You know what you're going to get. I mean, yes, defenses are figuring him out a little bit more and whatever, but the biggest problem is that defense. They're just not playing Ravens football in the defense they normally have played in the past. One thing that made the Ravens a great team was they're able to run the ball, manage the ball, and throw on, and then also playing great defense. And right now, they can't hold up against anybody. I mean, the Titans just ran all over the place on them. And don't get me wrong, it's King Henry back there, and he's gonna get his yards. But they're getting bullied up front. The defensive line are getting tossed around, and that's not something that they're accustomed to. So if you're not running the ball well, you're not playing great defense, you can't go out and expect Lamar Jackson to be anything other than Lamar Jackson. You drafted him, you know what type of quarterback he is. He's not going to go out there and sling it. He needs a defense that's going to hold up. And as long as that keeps happening, I don't see a bright future for them until they figure it out on the defense side of the ball.
Tua got benched. How do you think that plays in the locker room? Fitzpatrick comes in. They're not able to come back and win. The Dolphins had won 5 in a row. They lose on the road against the Broncos. What do you think the response is in the locker room to that decision?
You know, I know that Tua was excited. He was cheering Fitzpatrick, getting on back in the game. But there has to be some kind of consistency. You can't, whenever one quarterback starts to have a problem, you can't throw the other one in. I mean, you made a decision to move on to Tua from Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is fine. But win, lose, or draw, you need to stay with a guy at this point. You can't, throw Ryan Fitzpatrick back in the mix after Tua's not going out there getting it done. Now, you're going to have some games and some teams you're going to play that Ryan Fitzpatrick is a better fit to go out and win football games for you, but it doesn't matter. At that quarterback position, you got to have some consistency there and not throw Ryan Fitzpatrick back in the mix when things are not going well.
Justin Herbert, you're a Charger guy. We're talking to Sean Merriman. Herbert went 37 for 49, 366 yards, 3 touchdowns. And with the Joe Burrow injury and Tua getting benched, I also think basically the rookie of the year is over. It's going to be Herbert's to win. But I got a couple of questions about Herbert for you. First of all, as a Charger guy, how exciting is this to watch him? And second, can you remember a guy who has looked this much better at the quarterback position his rookie year in the NFL compared to his senior year in college? Because I can't. I was talking about this earlier on the show. It's not just that Justin Herbert's great. I watched a lot of those Oregon Duck games with him, and he didn't look anywhere near the quality of player that he has been in the NFL. So I'm curious if you can remember seeing a guy who came in this fast and looked this good relative maybe to expectations.
Yeah, and just to say this, that during a combine, I posted a tweet during a combine and said, look, Justin Herbert is the only quarterback for this team, and he is the future of this team. And I've seen that because it fits their style of offense. He is a NFL-style quarterback. And what I mean by that is you have some guys that are stuck in the system in college. You have some coaches that say, you know what, this is my playbook. I want you to play this way because this is how we have the plays drawn up. Now, the NFL, his talent and his elite level gets to shine. He gets to use his arm and get creative, use his legs. I mean, people are not remembering that he's 6'6", 6'7", or 6'6". 235-plus pounds. This is not a small quarterback, and he's mobile. He can do so many different things. And some of these darts that he's throwing out there right now, the Keenan Allen, the one he had when they just drilled the ball in the back of the end zone, those type of things where you anticipate where a wide receiver is going to be, those are things you pick up your third and fourth and fifth year in the NFL. He's doing that right now. The closest quarterback I can see in the last decade to come out and just ready to go right now I would say, is Andrew Luck. When I seen Andrew Luck, it was my last years with the Bills, and I got a chance to play him, and I was like, my gosh, man, this guy, this young, this coming in is ready to go, who was also a very mobile quarterback, and which is really, people didn't understand how mobile he was, but Andrew Luck playing against him, he was very fast and very mobile for his size. So that's the only quarterback I saw seen the last 10 years, the last decade, to come in as NFL ready. And let me tell you this, Justin Herbert, we're just seeing that he's just scratching the surface. I don't think people even seeing what he's going to be capable of doing. This is a guy who can throw for 350 yards a game. And if the defense keep holding up and getting him, get the ball back in his hands, he can average 350 a game, no problem.
We're talking to Sean Merriman, NFC East. This is just a joke. I mean, as a player, when you look around and think, I don't know what's going on with Carson Wentz. I mean, he's just been atrocious. The Cowboys went on the road and beat the Vikings. You've got the Giants, who seem to be cycling up a little bit. The Washington football team. Does it seem fair that a winner of the NFC East is going to get to host a home playoff game? And that, frankly, it's probably going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going on the road to play in that game. And maybe the Bucs think that's not a bad deal because they're going to get the best matchup of all. But it seems kind of ridiculous to me that, one, they even get a bid, and, two, they get to host a home playoff game.
No, I don't think it's fair at all. And I think that at some point in time it needs to change because it's been like that for a while. And you look at the NFC West and look at how many teams are locked in. It's 6-3 or 7-3, and they're neck and neck. And some of those teams are not going to get in. And you look at this division, and it's been like that for some time. It's almost in the sense of who can lose the best, right? I mean, that's when you start to look at that division to see what's going on. And you look around the NFL, and everybody is at least competitive in some type of way. Well, there's a clear best team in that division. And now you look at this division, you're like, wow, I mean, this team is really going to get a chance to get in the playoffs and take a spot from a team that is much better record than they have. So, yeah, at some point in time, the NFL has to look at that and make a decision on how they are going to move forward in the playoff berth, because it's embarrassing.
We're talking to Sean Merriman, running through all the activities going on in the NFL over the weekend. You can listen to Sean Merriman's podcast, The Lights Out Podcast, as part of the iHeart Podcast Network. Sean, the NFC in general, we talked about how many teams there are in the AFC that have a chance to potentially win this Super Bowl trip. But when you look at the decision that the Saints made to go with Taysom Hill over Jameis Winston as a defensive player, what would you have thought about that choice, and how would you assess Taysom Hill's performance on Sunday?
Well, you know, I don't want to take anything from Taysom Hill because he can do it all. I mean, he's earned his stripes in multiple positions. He's done everything that the organization has asked him to do. So, you know, I the problem that lies in me, and I really tuggle with it myself, is how we need to stop praising one guy to kind of kick another guy to the curb. We're not saying that Taysom Hill and Jameis, there's a problem there. But if you look at it from the outside looking in, and Jameis Winston probably should have had the upper hand of playing quarterback. He probably should have had the upper hand of being a starter than the Drew Brees went down. But that's not to take anything away from Taysom Hill. I think we do too much of that nowadays. If you can't give someone else props without kicking another one to the curb. But from the outside looking at a defensive player, you would think that Jameis Winston had a better shot or should have been the starting quarterback.
What do you think about the decision? I don't know if you saw this or not, but you had immediately after the game, Sean Payton, who has coached a lot of games in the NFL, he went on Twitter. Did you see what he did? Twitter?
Yeah, Roddy White. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for people out there who may not have seen this, I'm going to read it for you. I'm scrolling through my Twitter account. I want to make sure I get it right. Sean Payton, right after the game, Roddy White said, "Saints about to get whipped trying us with Taysom Hill at QB. We about to snack them." And Sean Payton retweeted that after the game. You like that from a head coach, or you don't like that?
I do, man. I do, especially for you know, former players or just anybody coming from another team in that division, right? And you want the team to resemble the coach's attitude. So big props to Sean Payton for coming back at him that way, and it just shows the confidence that he has in Taysom Hill and. Really the confidence going forward. And, you know, being a player in the locker room, you love it. right? You love it because you're looking. I was surprised that we didn't see a bunch of the other guys retweeted as well, because it just shows, man, the confident level that he has. And playing in that division, man, you have to have that attitude that you're just not going to be successful.
Did last question for you, and we're talking to Sean Merriman. Did the Bengals set up Joe Burrow to fail? I mean, one of the big challenges, and we may see this with Trevor Lawrence. In fact, I think you said on our show a couple of weeks ago, you know, the Jets continue to lose. And you said, hey, if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I don't know that I want to go to the Jets organization because of the incompetence there. And you went through this a little bit yourself with Eli Manning not wanting to play with the Chargers. I know it's an awful injury. Joe Burrow's out for the year. He showed a lot of flashes, but they gave up a lot of hits for him. Did the Bengals not do what they should have done with their young quarterback, or is it unfair to blame the Bengals organization?
Well, first off, I hope Joe Burrow he has a healthy, good surgery and a healthy recovery. You never want to see that somebody of that talent level. That he's going to have one of the brightest futures, and you can see it early on. And he was just put in a position to have to do too much his first year. And it's unfortunate sometimes that an organization don't build enough around you. And I'm talking about from the offensive line standpoint.
They let him get decked a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he was getting hit, and he was being forced to do way too much. I mean, look. He's still a rookie. First off, I'm against anyway rookie being thrown on the field right away. Anyway, I'm totally.
You're old school
it.
In that respect, or you think young quarterbacks should have a little bit more seasoning?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I think that especially because they didn't have a full offseason. He didn't have a preseason with this team, mini camps, and all the things that they normally would have had. That for sure. You bring somebody else in, and even if you got to take some lumps early on, you get that other guy and let him come in. 4, 5, 6 games into the season, because this is going to be your guy for the next 5 to 10 years. Never throw a guy of Joe Burrow's stature right there in the mix. And I don't want to say that it's their fault, because freak injuries happen all the time to anybody. But at the same time, you can't put a guy of his skill level, someone who you expect to be around 5 and 10 years in your organization, and put him in a bad situation. And I think that's what happened, not just because of the injury. I mean, the back-to-back hits that he was taking an entire year. All this added up to him to just end up being that one knee injury that he had.
Talking to Sean Merriman. Sean, appreciate the time, my man. We will talk to you hopefully next week. Have a good Thanksgiving week. You got any big plans?
Yeah, I'll be back home on the East Coast, my family in Maryland and my son, and spend the time there, and hopefully come back not 10 pounds heavier.
What's your first round draft pick for Thanksgiving? If you're going into the buffet line, and you can only grab one thing, what would be your first round pick?
Oh, the candy yams. Candy
oh
yams,
yeah,
sure. Yeah, candy yams. But, you know, my grandmother, you know, from my family's from South Carolina originally,
yep.
So they get down in the kitchen, and I'll actually throw blows to somebody who touches the candy yams first, because I like going in first for those.
Outstanding stuff as always. He's Sean Merriman, Lights Out Podcast, iHeart Podcast Network. Appreciate you, my man.
Thanks for having me.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Props to the Chiefs. I feel like we're going to be saying that rinse and repeat for the next 15 years of my sports career, because Patrick Mahomes is just that good. And, you know, the Chiefs fans have got such an embarrassment of sports riches to have him and be able to root for him for the next, you know, 15 years or whatnot of their time. But to me, as you kind of start to look forward here, a couple of stories I didn't dive into as much as I wanted to. One of them, and I'm going to unpack this in a big way tomorrow. How about the Heisman Trophy race being impacted potentially by games just getting canceled? And I kind of loved Dabo Swinney calling out Florida State for that decision not to play the game when the ACC said it was fine to play and the team had already traveled. All of Clemson was already there in Tallahassee. It's one thing if you call a game off a couple of days in a row, but once you've already allowed the team to make a trip out of their market and they're already at the stadium with some of their employees 3 hours until kickoff, and you suddenly say, hey, the game's not going to happen when the ACC is fine with it being played, I think there's going to be some bad blood going forward over the way that this decision came down. And again, to me, very few people will actually talk about this, but Dr. Sills, the NFL's lead doctor expert, said that there's not a single case of COVID being spread from play anywhere in the world that they're aware of. So because Clemson had a backup offensive lineman test positive for COVID on Friday, and they immediately isolated him, and he wasn't going to be able to play, the odds of Florida State actually being under duress or danger from this were virtually zero. So if they had wanted to play that football game, they could have played that football game. And I'm curious how this is going to shake out now, because the comments basically that Dabo made made it seem very clear that Clemson's not going to be willing to go back on the road back to Florida State to play. And frankly, I don't know what they have to gain by playing that game against Florida State, what would now have to be the week before the ACC championship game. They know they're a lot better than Florida State. They were a 35-point favorite. What do they have to prove? If they win their next couple of games, then they're in the ACC championship game against Notre Dame. And if they win that game, they'll be in the playoff. And so I don't see it as being a very difficult situation at all for Clemson going forward. That's a little bit of a complicated story. The BYU drama. Who's BYU going to play? Will they really play anybody everywhere? Play anybody wherever? Look, I gave credit to BYU, and I continue to, because when everybody in the Mountain West time zone and everybody in the Pacific time zone said, we're not playing college football this year, and they all quit and canceled their season, their games against BYU, BYU had to build an entirely new schedule. And they, I believe, BYU, need to get a couple of more talented teams on the schedule if it's possible. And so I understand their demand and the fact that they'll play anybody anywhere, which is basically what they tweeted. But this whole mess of trying to get games scheduled the week of is a big challenge. But I think if you're BYU or you're Cincinnati and you really want to end up in a situation where you're being considered for one of these playoff bids, if things break in your way, then you have to get a couple of these games scheduled like now, right? Where somebody suddenly has an opening. The Pac-12 has now said, hey, we can have non-conference games. And I think if you're BYU, you have to leap at every single opportunity you get there. I don't see how it can be remotely difficult at all to make the decision about whether or not you're going to play. All this to say, great games, phenomenal day in the NFL. As I said earlier, three big games, the Ravens hosting the Titans. My Titans got a huge win. We had a huge win for the Colts against the Packers. Both of those games went to overtime, and then it almost went to overtime with a monumental win for the Chiefs, avenging their only defeat so far this year. Patrick Mahomes is a bad, bad man and continues to dominate.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.